Hi, I'm Neil Stavem. I want to thank you for listening to this podcast from Connecting Faith. There are many more podcasts available at our website, myfaithradio.com. And your support makes this possible.
Always expect something good on your lunch hour. Connecting Faith with Life.
Hi, welcome to today's Connecting Faith. Great to have you along. I'm Neil Stavem, Ted Roth, the controls, and we're looking forward to a good hour today, Ted. We're going to talk about great ways to honor your husband and your wife.
You know, no matter where you're at in your relationship, it's good to check in and reflect on that.
We'll see if we can apply some of it. We're going to reference a couple of books, 8 Great Ways to Honor Your Husband and 8 Great Ways to Honor Your Wife. So you'll want to kind of keep score, I guess, and make sure that we get through all 8. I guess. Don't want to do any more.
Yeah.
We're only going to do 8.
Right.
Bare minimum. So I do want to just, before we jump in and visit with our guests, I want to just mention yesterday we're talking with Craig DeRoche from Prison Fellowship, and we're talking about prison reform, some of those issues. And Denise wrote me a note right at the end of the program, just wanted to clarify some things. So we talked about felons unable to vote. And she said, well, in her case, she's been an election judge in Minnesota. And so is that, you know, they do have that opportunity to vote. And in fact, as I looked it up more, found out the 19 states do allow felons to vote. Their voting rights can be restored after incarceration and parole. There's still 11 states that they may lose voting rights permanently, but at least want to make that clarification. And so I appreciate Denise pointing that out to us. And always glad to hear from our listeners, whatever the situation, and keep us pointed in the right direction.
Yeah, we have an open-door policy right there, myfaithradio.com. Contact the show anytime.
When you're on myfaithradio.com, I still have some time to sign up for that Chip Ingram opportunity. For the real heaven, so that's going on through the end of the month. So check that out. You can get the free series on that. Chip Ingram from Living on the Edge is his new book on heaven, and the message series is available there. We're going to talk to one of our other programmers today. David Chadwick is a name hopefully you have come to recognize. David is one of the speakers, one of the regular teachers on Back to the Bible. Now that we still have some messages from Warren Wiersbe, and Daryl Bach is also part of it, but David, the primary teacher these days, and his main job, his real job, is to pastor Forest Hill Church in Charlotte, North Carolina. He's been there since 1980. Worship is now over 6,000 with several campuses. He played basketball at and graduated from University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill, and also played professional basketball for a few years in Europe. And we've already gone through the Final Four conversation, so we're not even going to bring that up.
Okay, good.
You know, so I won't even mention Villanova at all. And they said,
ooh, it's hurting even more.
I know. Well, I was rooting for North Carolina that they really had a great team this year. Anyway, and David and his wife Marilyn have co-written these books. Marilyn is a gifted writer in her own right. She's been co-founder, principal speaker for Women Under Construction. It's an outreach of Forest Hill Church. And she has a BA in journalism and a master's degree in counseling. And we're honored to have both David and Marilyn with us on Connecting Faith. Guys, welcome to Connecting Faith.
Thank you, Neil. It's great to be with you from sunny, beautiful Charlotte, North Carolina.
Yeah, we're glad to be here today, Neil.
Yeah, that's kind of, you know, the sunny, beautiful part. That does sound pretty enticing. So, all right.
After your comments about North Carolina and Villanova, I had to do something to make you feel awful.
Well, we are glad to make a connection. David, maybe just say a bit about your a fairly recent role as one of the teachers on Back to the Bible. Of course, that has a storied history going back, what, about, I don't know, 60, 70 years, I think. And so to be part of that legacy, that's pretty interesting.
Well, it really is, Neil. They have an office here in Charlotte, and when an opening came up in the fall of last year, They approached me and asked me if I'd be open to being one of their Bible teachers. I've been doing radio here in Charlotte with a local show on a secular station for the last 15-plus years, so I have a radio background and obviously love teaching God's Word and an expositor, so it seemed to fit. So since last August or so, I have been one of, if not the principal teacher, for Back to the Bible, and believe me, I am honored to do so. When I look at the names of the teachers who have taught through the years in that great ministry, I am absolutely overwhelmed that I'm a small part of that continued legacy.
We're glad to have you on and have appreciated the message series. And I encourage our listeners, if you've not yet tuned in and made it part of your regular listening experience, you check it out weekday mornings at 10 Central. Back to the Bible, David Chadwick with us, along with his wife, Marilyn. And we want to talk about your book, Eight Great Ways to Honor Your Husband, Eight Great Ways to Honor Your Wife. Marilyn wrote one, David the other. And a lot of it, I guess it seems like, you know, marriage relationships are one of those unique relationships where maybe we're susceptible to becoming dishonoring in some ways. Maybe it's just the words we say or our attitudes. So why do you think that is? David, we'll start with you. Why is this such an important topic?
Well, you know, the goal of all marriage, Neil, is outlined for us in the Bible in Genesis 2:24 in creation before the fall ever occurred. And it's one man, one woman in a committed heterosexual monogamous relationship forever. And when that works rightly, in Psalm 127:1 language, when the watchman is walking the walls rightly, the city's not operating in vain, nor is the marriage operating in vain. So when the marriage is operating rightly, the nation is healthy. But like all marriages, there's that taint of sin in individuals, and they do not operate totally the way they're supposed to. And one of the things Marilyn and I wanted to do was to recover this idea of honor, which is throughout the Bible, but is really a word that's gone missing in action in today's culture. And we wanted to reclaim it because not only is it all throughout the Scripture, but it's all throughout the family life. It's all throughout marriage life. So that was the purpose of the entire book. And I might get Marilyn now to comment on what she found the definition of honor to be.
Well, you know, you can look at honor from several different levels. And David and I were caught unaware, actually, Neil, about how, like he said, it's missing in today's culture. We saw words like admiration and respect, dignity, honesty, and worth, integrity, things like that. But when we started unpacking it from a biblical perspective, we just found like a treasure chest and realized that it had to do with things like prizing and, David, it even had to do with monetary wealth, didn't it?
It did. A treasure, a priceless value.
Even worship. I think one of the words that we discovered that was connected to honor biblically was worship. So we just realized that honor probably is missing on many different levels. And, of course, in our case, we were chiefly looking at marriage.
Romans 12:10, Neil, is an interesting verse. It says, honor one another in the church. And interestingly, it's the only time that particular phraseology is used in the entire Bible, and it has to do with competing with one another.
Yes, it's outdo one another in honor.
So when you really do think about the competitive nature of our society, wouldn't it be wonderful if people in the church started competing with one another to try to outdo one another in honoring one another? That would be special.
Indeed. You know, I was thinking that, I mean, we are, I guess, what comes to mind when we think about honor is that, you know, the Scripture talks about in Ephesians, we're to honor our, well, I guess that's in the Ten Commandments, right? We're to honor our fathers and mothers. Is it assumed that we should be doing this to our spouses as well?
Well, you know, I think honor is so important, like we just said, throughout the entire culture of the Christian family. God sets the bar so low that even children can get it. And I think it's like that honor your mother and father is the first commandment with a promise. It's like the training wheels. And if you get that, then you move on to honoring God, of course. But we feel like honor in marriage is probably the thing that sets the barometer for the home. And interestingly, the group in our church, we just did a four-part sermon series, and the group in our church that really grabbed onto this concept of honor the most enthusiastically were our millennials, 35 and under. And they, I can't tell you the number of young women that have wanted to take me out for coffee since that series and just tell me of their concerns about the lack of honor among their age group. And so, like I said, David and I feel like we've uncovered a treasure chest.
And the whole idea of dishonor, Neil, is very interesting. Marilyn found out something in that arena that's very interesting.
Well, every child can tell you what it means to be dissed, you know, but you look at urban slang, and diss means obviously disrespect, disgrace, but any kid can tell you what it means to be dissed or to diss somebody. And we realize that, sadly, dissing one another in our culture, and of course we see this in every realm of society right now in America, dissing one another is kind of like the new normal. So honor sort of sets us apart, and we've realized that our culture, we think, is thirsty for honor, and in some respects we almost feel like it's become sort of a new apologetic for us. Because people are thirsty for it. They don't really know what it is that they want. But when we did this series on honor, a lot of them are coming to us saying, gosh, we didn't know that was a biblical value. We really want more of this.
And if the goal of marriage, Neil, is for two to become one, what Marilyn and I wanted to do with our books was to give people 8 practical ways that they can help become one by learning the lesson of honoring one another.
And we're going to unpack some of those 8 practical ways here in the moments ahead. Do want to just invite you to join the conversation with us if you have a question or a comment. Maybe you've experienced honoring your mate or being honored by your mate. And tell us what kind of difference that's made for you. 877-933-2484 is the phone number. 877-93-FAITH. We do have a copy of each of the books to give away. 8 Great Ways to Honor Your Husband. 8 Great Ways to Honor Your Wife. I think we'll just make it a package set here and give them away here at the top of the hour. So you can sign up for that when you call 877-93-FAITH and get your name in the drawing for that here. We'll do that at the end of the hour. We'll talk more with David and Marilyn Chadwick in just a moment. David's a pastor of Forest Hill Church in Charlotte, North Carolina, multi-site church in Maryland. Is the co-founder and principal speaker of Women Under Construction. It's an outreach of Forest Hill Church as well, and they have written together. In fact, David's written the book, The 12 Leadership Principles of Dean Smith, where he played basketball for Dean some years ago and also played some professional basketball in Europe. And I guess, you know, if we run out of things to talk about, we'll maybe just mention, you know, NBA, finals and get some perspective on that, too. Or maybe on how to work on our post move. We'll see. 877-93-FAITH. There's more just ahead. You're listening to Connecting Faith, talking today about ways to honor our mates. The books we're referencing, 8 Great Ways to Honor Your Husband, 8 Great Ways to Honor Your Wife, written by our guests today, David and Marilyn Chadwick. David is the pastor of Forest Hill Church, North Carolina. Marilyn works as alongside her husband and is the principal speaker and co-founder of Women Under Construction, outreach of Forest Hill in Charlotte. And as both as husbands and wives, we have a unique ability to honor our mates in a way that no one else can. And Marilyn, maybe we'll just start with you, because you, before we kind of break down some of the 8 great ways, you say that honor requires self-sacrifice and humility. Just say more about that.
Well, you know, and those are, again, 2 virtues that are sort of missing in action along with honor. They're counterintuitive. And I think the minute you start to say, I'm going to honor, in my case, honor my husband, I realize that that means I'm putting myself back a notch or two. David and I did not set out to write these books. I'll say that from the beginning. We had a publisher that loved the topic of honor and asked us if we'd be willing to write these. And so as we delved into it, we realized that it was kind of taking us to the mat. And instead of just, for in my case, instead of just saying things, well, I'm going to concentrate on submitting to my husband, I realized that honor was setting the bar quite a bit higher. And like you said earlier, it calls for things like self-sacrifice. I have to believe the best about David. I have to really almost seek to build him up in a much stronger way if I want to honor him, because honor is believing the very best and prizing somebody. So it really, I had no idea that I was going to be on such a good learning curve when I wrote my portion of the book. David, what about you?
Well, I felt the same way. When I started studying the word honor in the Bible again, I saw it all throughout the Scripture, and not the least of which in the way we're supposed to honor the Lord and worship Him. So that means that I'm supposed to prize and value and treasure Marilyn, and I jokingly say in the book, she is my once forever permanent trophy bride. I mean, she really is the one that I put into my life and say she's the most valued treasure next to the Lord I have. And so I spend my life now trying to honor her in every possible way to make sure everyone knows, myself especially, how prized and valued she is.
Well, and it's funny because after 38 years of marriage, I think you can get away with saying that. And I think we realize that, and we see this with a lot of our younger couples, people are going into marriage these days with less of an emphasis on how to make the other person feel special. It's just a very self-centered culture that we're living in. And like I said before the break, I'm finding so many of these young couples coming to us now saying, we want to learn how to honor our spouse. So that's why David and I tried to break it down into eight really simple ways. And we, like I said, we think it has helped our marriage, don't we, David?
I think so. And I think a lot of these young couples that are coming to us, they really want marriages that will work. They want them to last. They don't want to have to go through the painful divorces they've seen their parents go through, right, or other friends go through. They really want Genesis 2:24, that once and for all, forever union life that you're supposed to have with your spouse.
Well, and I think honor sets us up for not just a marriage that survives. And this is where I think this was attractive to people. We really want the marriages to thrive. And I just can't think of a better thing to sort of polish the beautiful parts of a marriage than honor. And I think you and I were instinctively doing some of that, David. But as we dug into God's Word, not only do we find a great theological framework for it, but in my case, interviewing lots of women, I just learned lots of new ways to do it. So after 38 years of marriage, it was a nice breath of fresh air even for us. So no wonder it's good news for these younger marriages.
And we've enjoyed, Neil, sharing these eight great principles so much with people who really want their marriages to work.
And we're seeing broken marriages now at the rate that we've never seen them. And when you're in one spot, like we've been for 35 years of our ministry, the divorce rate everywhere is going up. But now, sadly, 70% of divorces are being initiated by women. So I had kind of a special mission that I was undertaking when I wrote this book for women.
Well, Marilyn, let me ask you more about that, because one of the questions or one of the issues, one of the eight ways you're talking about, I guess, being strong, believing the best, you know, does a wife need to believe that her husband is really better than he is? I mean, should we have an honest evaluation of our mate?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, and are we his press agent, you know, collecting the best press clippings and giving him a better image than he really is? And I don't think the Bible never calls us to be untruthful or unrealistic. But I will say this, you know, you've always got a choice of whether you believe the best about a person or believe the worst. And I was really challenged by a Buckingham quote. It was one of the Gallup poll studies that was trying to find out what was the ingredient in the most successful marriages. And, of course, David and I both have our master's in counseling, so we knew all the traditional, you know, therapies about this and the theories about what makes for good relationships. But I was really surprised by what the Gallup group found. And what they discovered is that in the strongest marriages, and they interviewed thousands of people, there was one common theme, and it was this. Each partner rated, in the good marriages, each partner rated the other higher than they rated themselves. In other words, I would believe in David more than he even believes in himself. Now, I don't know if that's, you know, building up his press clippings or believing what's not true. It's really a matter of perspective, but it's also, you know, Philippians 4 about what you meditate on. And I realized in the course of writing this book that I really have a choice in terms of what I believe about David. You know, all of us can believe the best or the worst. We do have choices in that area. And so this was a great challenge for me. And now I'm passing this along to our daughter and our son and daughter-in-law about, you know, think about not just your words. We always talk about words, but who really encourages us to think the best? And again, I don't think we should think lies, but we have a choice to think the best. Would you agree with that, David?
I would, and in a couple of chapters that I wrote too, Neil, like respect her opinion, you know, when she gives you insights onto things, or trust her gut when she warns you about something's another chapter that I wrote about. It all fits back into this same thing Marilyn just mentioned, mm-hmm. and that is the belief that I outmarried myself, you know, that in football jargon, I outran my coverage, that I got the good end of the deal, and I really do believe that, but I think that's been a part of how we've honored one another.
Well, we both have parents that have very long-lasting marriages. And I'll never forget my dad, who's one of the few remaining World War II submarine veterans. But he used to always tease about how he married up, and Mama would, and he couldn't believe Mama would out with him the first time. And Mama said back to him, "Well, why did it take you so long to ask me out?" And I think it's cute because after 63 years of marriage, they still tell me they each married up, and I think that's a real secret to a good marriage.
Is it a matter of just those little phrases? I mean, saying those kinds of things. I mean, obviously, you talked about it's important to think the best, but you know, there's something about just saying those kind of maybe sort of cliches or cute little phrases that do make a difference, right?
I think habits matter. I really do. I think our words and our actions, and even, you know, sometimes things might seem routine or contrived, but we grow in whatever we practice, don't we? And so I do, I think we practice these habits.
Well, actually, Neil, one of the chapters in my book's entitled Use Your Words Wisely, and I do give some phrases that I've learned through the years that honor Marilyn, things like, I'm honored to be your husband, I love you more than you love me, kind of a joke we have between each other that she always says, oh, no, you don't, and we get into one of those friendly, wonderful arguments that, you know, I think honors one another. Then thank you for all you do for me. I never want to take you for granted is another one. Here's one that I always love to say to her. I got the better end of the deal. Thank you for saying yes. So I give a good number of the phrases I use, and I really do believe life and death is in the tongue in accordance with Proverbs 18:21, and you can use your words either to build up or to tear down. And when you find words of honor that give life to the other, they do indeed bless the other person in the marriage.
Well, and marriage is work. I mean, let's face it, marriage is work, and it's hard work. And like any other endeavor in life, hard work, you know, it's hard, and it takes practice. And so I don't know anybody that develops a good marriage on autopilot.
Several years ago, my son Michael and I were trying to figure out a way to honor Marilyn with her birthday, and we couldn't think of anything new, so we decided finally to take those little Post-it notes and to write little love notes on those and place them all over the house. There are probably dozens of them. What was interesting, Marilyn found them and smiled with each one. But a couple of few weeks ago, I found one of them still plastered on the refrigerator 5 years after Michael and I had put up the phrase of, I'm just honored to be your husband. So words do matter.
I was going to ask you, were you saying those phrases before you wrote the book? I mean, you've been married 38 years, so you've had opportunity to do a lot of developing various habits, right?
Yeah, well, you know, obviously we must have been doing something right, but we just hadn't thought about it so much. And so when we decided to do these books, and I will say this, David and I wrote the books independently. We didn't conspire. We wrote them not knowing what the other one wrote. And so I told our editor, you just better make sure we're not lying here. But, you know, it was a very great time of – we wrote them in a very intense period of about 5 months. It was a wonderful time of reflection on the past. And so I think, David, you might agree with this. We did discover that there were things that we were doing, some things we were doing right that we really hadn't ever thought about. And when you have to put them on paper, you're like, oh, my gosh, that was actually a pretty good idea. My first point was about first becoming strong yourself as a woman, you know, telling wives that if you really want to honor your husband, you have to become honorable and first become strong. I had not realized what a core value of mine that was until I started writing about it. Well, now it's kind of really become, you know, a launch pad for me in conversations with young women about the importance of being really strong in the Lord. And that is your basis for a good marriage, for good parenting, or whatever else you do.
For mine, Neil, it was be a man of God, and both of us realized that we really wrote the book less about talking about marriage, but more talking about make sure your own personal relationship with the Lord is strong, then use that as the foundation for launching into a successful marriage.
And then we don't drink the other person dry. And again, I had not realized, David.
Our phone cut out a little bit there, Marilyn, and David will reconnect here in seconds. So we do have a break coming up. I do want to mention the books are available for drawing, 8 Great Ways to Honor Your Wife, 8 Great Ways to Honor Your Husband. You can sign up for that and join the conversation all at 877-93-FAITH. It's 877-933-2484.
I'm going to love you forever.
It's Connecting Faith. I'm Neil Stavem. Tad, I'm sure you and I could agree with David Chadwick. He said, you know, we married up, right? We outkicked our coverage or whatever that was. So we're just thankful for good mates and learning how to honor our mates today. 8 great ways to honor your husband. 8 great ways to honor your wife. Those are the books we're referencing. We've got set to give away here at the top of the hour, and you can sign up for that at 877-933-2484. And join us with a question or comment as well. Talking with Marilyn and David Chadwick. David and Marilyn have been married for now 38 years. They've been in ministry for 35 years at Forest Hill Church in Charlotte. It's now a multi-site church. David has played professional basketball, actually, for a time in Europe after playing for Dean Smith at the University of North Carolina. In fact, has written about Dean Smith's influence in the book called The 12 Leadership Principles of Dean Smith, and has developed a successful leadership seminar based on those principles outlined in the book. David and Marilyn both have degrees, and Marilyn leads the Women Under Construction Outreach at Forest Hill Church, and we're honored to have them with us today. Maybe before we go any further, we should just kind of summarize, because there are 8 great ways to honor your husband, 8 great ways to honor your wife. So, David, maybe we'll start with you and just give us a little thumbnail sketch of what those 8 are.
Sure. They are the practical suggestions I've learned through the years on ways to honor, and the word honor again means value, esteem, treasure, prize your wife, first of all, by trusting her gut. I've learned through the years that Marilyn has a 6th sense, kind of a radar system that can anticipate issues, problems, difficulties in my life. And when I listen to her and guard her words, things go better. When I don't, I oftentimes step in stuff, and I've learned that through the years. Secondly, I honor her by being a man of God, that I don't look to her to be my life. I look to Jesus to be my life. Thirdly, by encouraging her gifts. She's uniquely gifted, so I've helped her in every way that I possibly can explore her speaking giftedness, her writing giftedness, her leadership giftedness. Fourth, by respecting her opinion. I want to know what she feels about things. I want to know who she's reading, who's teaching her, from where she's learning. And when she gives me her opinion, I need to honor that opinion. Fifth, by asking her this very important question often, how's your heart? That when we're together, every Friday we take that day off, we disconnect from the church, we unplug our phones, and we go out and have coffee together and just talk. And as often as I can, I ask her the question, how's your heart? Because as Proverbs 4 says, the heart is the wellspring of all life. Sixth, I also honor her by sharing my heart with her. When we're together, when I share my heart with her, she realizes that I really do care enough that I want her to know what's going on inside of me. Seventh, I honor her by being a guardian and a gardener of my home. I'm a guardian in not letting evil come into it. I'm a gardener by planting the nutrients of grace, God's word, and other spiritual values in our home. And seventh and finally, I honor her by using my words wisely. I find phrases and things that I know that build her up that I speak to her over and over and over again. Again, Proverbs 8:21 says, life and death is in the tongue. So I realize my words toward her can either tear her down or build her up. So I purposefully found phrases through the years that I speak to her over and over again to build her up.
Good summary. Marilyn, give you an opportunity to do the same. What are those great ways to honor your husband?
Yeah, like I said, it was like looking in the rearview mirror to see what we've been doing all these years. I alluded to the first one earlier, and that is first to become a strong woman of God. If I want to honor David, I need to first become strong, and I do a study of Genesis 2 and how the Lord said, in observing all that he had created, but it wasn't good for Adam to be alone, so he made a helper that was suitable for him, and there are lots of different translations and definitions of that word, but the Hebrew is ezer, and it's actually a military term. It's a very strong word, and so the implication is if I'm to be an ezer, I'm to be strong for David, that's one of the best ways of honoring him, and we like to say that also keeps it from being a slurpy marriage, where we drink each other dry. Secondly, to believe the best about him. I have a choice whether I believe the worst or the best, given the benefit of the doubt. Interpret him through the lenses of the positive. And I think on many occasions I've communicated to David that I believed in him when he didn't even believe in himself. Sad to say, there are also times where I have pulled him down, like we do in marriage sometimes. And this has been a real great wake-up call for me to realize, again, the power of life and death, not just in the tongue, but in terms of what we believe. And so with my words and my thoughts, then the third chapter for me was to build him up. I interviewed a lot of friends for this book, Neil, and I realized that my friends that are really good leaders and whatever it is that they lead actually have an easier time building their husbands up and telling me how they did that than the friends that are struggling with their worth. And I thought that was really interesting. It's almost like people, women that are good leaders, know how important it is to build confidence in leadership. So they were the ones that had some great ideas for building up their husbands. Fourth, my role, I feel, and again, I've learned this over the years, is to fight for David, primarily in prayer. And part of our journey, and I talk about this a little bit in the book, is that we went through 9 years of infertility, and now we have three children, but those they were like, 99 months where life was really hard and 3 months where we actually got pregnant. It was a long journey and one that we learned to fight together. So part of my fighting spirit, I guess you could say, is that I know what it means to fight for something. And so part of my championing of David is to fight for him in prayer. And kind of along those same lines, fifth for me was to guard our home. And if you look at Titus 2 and you look at the word there for women to be keepers at home, you know, that's kind of an archaic translation that goes back to the King James. And so a lot of other newer versions say things like be busy at home. But if you go back to the 1500s to find out what a keep was, it was actually a part of a castle. It was a tower inside. And so when you think of a keep for a castle, it's a pretty doggone strong thing to be a keeper. It doesn't mean to be a domestic servant. So guard your home means things like create structure and order and watch what goes in, watch what comes out of the home. The secret is the guard, I think, like in good football. The next one is to lighten David's load. I worked on ways to help, as he talked about earlier, keeping our Sabbath was really important for us, wasn't it, David? We had a family night together with the kids, and then we had a day off together. And we think one of the secrets of our long-term sustainability has been just the ability to lighten the load, and that's part of what I love to do for David. The seventh one was to dream big together. We just returned from a trip to the Middle East. I tell you what, I'm always hopping on a plane to go somewhere, it seems like somewhere dangerous. And this has been true throughout our ministry. And early on, I felt like God really challenged me and said, you know what, part of what you can do that's going to be really exciting for you is to dream big with him. So, David, what we've got ministry now on six continents, and a lot of that was, and from my perspective, learning how to dream big with him, and then finally to create a culture of honor in the home. And I think this is a nice way to close out the book, because I asked David, what is the thing in our family that has caused him to feel honored the most? And he said, well, you know, aside from our marriage, I guess my heart is really warmed because my kids believe what I believe. And we really look back and think that somehow God gave us the grace to create a home, like we say, a home where grace was in place, but we believe it spilled over into the outside world as well, and it was a tool for evangelism. So that culture of honor in our home, I think it's the thing that I wanted to leave my readers with. I even had 50 ways to leave your legacy, not leave your lover, but leave your legacy and leave just your imprint of culture on the home. So that was me.
I like it. Great conversation today. David and Marilyn Chadwick sharing what they're recommending. 8 great ways to honor your wife, 8 great ways to honor your husband. 877-93-FAITH is our phone number. Larry's checking in from Eagan. Larry, go ahead with your call with David and Marilyn.
Well, hi, thank you so much. I think any kind of reminder on how we should love our spouse is really helpful. One thing I found, though, is in the troubled marriages that I've come across is they don't have accountability. They may be hidden in the back of the church, and they love Jesus, but something comes between them, and if they just had somebody who could intervene. And when my wife and I had troubles, we sought out a couple, and we used materials like what you guys are offering. And I just wanted to add that. I'm really thankful you guys put these out and that you're an example of what God's doing by honoring one another.
Good word. Thanks, Larry. David and Marilyn, that really, this is something that we would benefit by having others. Maybe it's in our Bible study or small group or just friends in the church to kind of hold each other accountable on our words and our actions, right?
Absolutely. And Larry, I'm so glad you brought that up. That's something that we often skate past, and we treat this Christian life and even our marriages like they're a solo journey. And especially in today's world with so many challenges facing us, I don't know how you can do it without accountability. And I just applaud you and your wife for, first of all, being honest, you know, with your struggles and walking alongside friends that could help you. I met with a life group. We have life groups in our church. And I met with 12 young women last night that were all married with kids and young mommies. And I just can't tell you how my heart was so warm seeing how they're working with each other, like you said, to hold each other accountable, but also to give practical tips and suggestions to one another, and then to be a safe place to kind of vent those frustrations that come when you don't want to tear your spouse down, but you are having trouble. One of my sweet young friends said this. She said, for a while I stopped going to my business lunches with my non-Christian friends because they always bash their husbands so much. But then she said, you know, but I want to be transparent. My husband and I aren't perfect. So I tried to find ways to respectfully let him know that we had issues, but then I let him know how we were working through them so they could see the full circle of a healthy conflict resolution rather than just random bashing. So this idea of helping young couples today hold each other accountable, I think is a real challenge of the church.
Yeah, I think the first accountability, Neil, is to the Lord, obviously, and in your prayer life every day, going to him and opening your heart and saying, Lord, is there anything you need to reveal to me that's not of you? But I think there's an accountability in the marriage that Marilyn and I have with one another where we're honest with one another and we don't hold things back. We don't hide our secrets with one another. And I think we've done well over the years not to have secrets. And thirdly, I think this thing Marilyn just mentioned, so key, is in the body of Christ, have accountability with other people. And for men, I keep telling them to have somebody who will ask them regularly, are you being faithful to your wife? And then the second question is, did you just answer that question honestly? And I think that allows accountability to occur so that the marriages can remain pure and holy and also together.
You, I know, David, one of the things that you talk about is, you know, asking Marilyn regularly this important question, I mean, how's your heart? I think, you know, guys don't always maybe communicate in the same way or at the same level as wives. Women are, I'm sure, want to talk more maybe than men. So how do we come to that place where we open up the doors to each other's insecurities?
Well, you know, there's some research to back up what you just said. Women, on an average every day, speak 21,000 words to the man's 7,000. So we're talking three times as much as you guys. So I think David's right in giving a few phrases just to get the ball rolling. I know he doesn't sound cliche when he says that to me. I mean, he doesn't always repeat, how's your heart, in exactly the same way. But he does some version of that to make sure we're communicating. But I think it would be easy for you not to, David. I mean, that's the thing. You have 7,000 words to my 21,000.
And I just ask, how's your heart? But another way of saying the same thing is, how are you doing?
Yeah, what's
going on in your life? Or those kind of things. And she tells me she's
ready. I have enough
words,
She's
ready to share it with me. And the key, though, is that I'm willing to hear her. And I give some tips in the book on how to reflect what she's saying back to her to make sure that she feels heard. But then also, Neil, as important as that is, I think men need to share their hearts. Yeah. And there was a difficult time in the church one time years ago, and I shared the story in the book. When I was just ready to give up, it was a very difficult time, and Marilyn and I were away on vacation. I woke up at about 3 o'clock in the morning. She awakened with me, too, and she said, what's going on? And I didn't want to share with her my heart because, you know, men don't cry.
Big
men don't do that.
Cry,
And finally, I did share with her what was going on, and I just kind of broke down. And I'll never forget this. She spoke several words to me that changed my life, and if Forest Hill Church has impacted the world for the Lord, which I think it has, it's because of these words she spoke to me back in the early 90s. She said, David, I believe in you. That's all she said, Neil. David, I believe in you. And I got a new surge of hope and encouragement just from those words. I was able to come back, fight through the battle, and now remove all the difficulties that were there. And the church has become prosperous and strong because of those powerful 5 words.
But I didn't know it at the moment. That's what the funny thing is. This is where life and reality and principles all connect sometimes after the fact, because it was later that you told me. I didn't realize that was such a defining moment, but I'm just so thankful that, you know, at that particular time I said the words, I do believe in you.
But
you know?
But I was willing to share my heart, which was key. So both have to be willing to share their heart for that heart connection to occur and for the whole goal of marriage, again, Genesis 2:24, for two to become one.
Well, and people spell love T-I-M-E. And David, I don't think this is going to happen unless people are willing to take the practical action of carving out time. And that looks different for different people. In yours and my case, we do take Fridays off together. We can't. We both work on the weekends. We work all the time, really. And we are so thankful that we have those days off together, and we've done that the whole course of our marriage, and I think it's paid off in incredible dividends looking back, don't you?
And, Neil, I would say make sure you have a weekly, regular time together when you can get together and you can ask, how's your heart? And then the other can respond, and then the other person can share how his or her heart is, and the two have that heart connection.
And that only not only gives you rest, which, rest is really one of those things that humans need to function and marriages need to survive. But we've had friends that have done real creative ways to make that part of their marriage, date nights, coffee mornings. I mean,
every marriage is different. You'll need to figure it out yourself, but make sure you have time together when each person can share their hearts with one another. That is a way you can honor the other person, that you care enough to know what's going on inside the other person's heart.
We've got some time for more conversation in just a moment. We need to take a quick break, and we'll continue on talking 8 great ways to honor your wife, 8 great ways to honor your husband. There are new books written by our guests today, Marilyn and David Chadwick. They are the lead at the Forest Hill Church. David's been the senior pastor there for 35 years. They've been married for 38, have 3 children, Bethany, David Banner, and Michael, and son-in-law Ryan, daughter-in-law Jesse, grandchildren as well. We're talking about their great books and their encouragement to us today. We've got a set of the books we're going to give away here at the top of the hour. If you'd like to sign up for one of those or maybe have a question or a comment, you're welcome to join us at 877-933-2484. Understand that could be David Chadwick singing. He's got sort of that James Taylor sound to his voice, as I understand. So that's
And he went to the University of North Carolina, Neil.
There we go. So maybe it's something in the water there, huh? So.
Yeah,
but that's how he swept me off my feet, though, because I don't know if you read this in my book. You might not have, but I was an atheist in college.
Well, yes,
I was never going to become a Christian ever. And then the second adamant promise I made to myself and to the world and to God, if He existed, which I didn't think He did, was that I would never, ever marry a minister. So it did help that he could sing and play the guitar like James Taylor. That was contextualization.
Well, not like James Taylor, but I tried.
Well, and then he said, Brent, you know, he needed to do something to kind of woo this ex-sorority chick, you know.
Yeah. Well, speaking French and singing like James Taylor, I think that sounds like, guys, there's something to aspire to if you're looking at. One of the things, David, you talk about, and I guess we should address too, is that, you know, Peter reminds us that husbands need to treat their wives with gentleness and respect. And I know, Marilyn, you suggest that gentleness is a good trait for wives as well. Just say more about Peter's advice there in 1 Peter 3.
Yeah, it's interesting that in 1 Peter 3, that's the only place in the Bible where it tells husbands to honor their wives, yet it's very, very clear. And there's a caveat connected with that honoring of wives, too. Peter says that may be the reason some of your prayers, guys, aren't getting answered, is because you're dishonoring your wife. So if you want to do a little quid pro quo with God, which isn't always wise, but if you want to receive some blessings from Him through prayer, look at your ways that you're honoring your wife. It's very clear in 1 Peter 3 that husbands are supposed to honor their wives.
Well, and David, we're supposed to honor each other and be gentle with each other, aren't we? And wives, you know, it's interesting. Wives have a different kind of gentleness that needs to come out. And I look at one of my friends whom I'll call Grace. I won't give her her real name, but I tell you what, she to me is the epitome of a gentle wife. And sometimes the Bible tells us when our words aren't working too well, that it's a gentle and quiet spirit that will allow our husband to really see Christ in us. And my friend Grace just to me demonstrated this for years. Her husband was a high-powered attorney, wanted nothing to do with God, and I just watched the way she sort of skated gently through the marriage, loving him, built him up. She was not patronizing, and she never talked ugly about him behind his back. She was not a weak woman at all, but she knew what it meant to have that kind of biblical gentleness, that's bridled power, I think is really the better translation. And I'll be amazed to see the fruit of all her time of gentleness, because we've watched him become a Christian. We've watched their kids come to Christ. I mean, there's just no telling what the world impact is going to be with this very powerful man that came to Jesus because of a gentle wife.
Well, that whole idea of gentleness, again, is enwrapped in the word praus in the Bible in the Greek, and it does mean bridled power. It's like a stallion with enormous strength but has been broken with a bridle on it, and the power is still there, but it's just under the bridle of a master. And so we use our great strength, but it's under the bridle of the master, Jesus, who takes our lives and makes them the way he wants them to be. So as a wife is gentle toward her husband, using her gifts, using her strengths, the husband is wooed to Christ by her gentle, quiet and soft witness.
When words fall short, especially. And I think that's the key. And I really love that idea that gentleness is strong. I love a quote once that I read that says there's nothing as strong as gentleness and nothing as gentle as real strength. And that may be another one of those virtues, David, that we're hoping to recapture with this book, because we live in a culture that prizes cruelty and violence and, you know, kind of a kick butt attitude. And this gentleness that's a biblical form of gentleness, again, I think the world really is thirsty for it. And I know marriages are thirsty for it.
Yeah. Well, speaking of bridal power, David, you do address the fact that, you know, occasionally you have given your wife the remote control on the TV. Maybe just say a little word about that.
Well, let's emphasize that word occasionally.
Okay.
Be like once. Well, the time.
In the book, when I talk about respecting her opinion, there are a list of 20 things I've tried to do for her. Occasionally giving her the remote control is one of those. But, you know, things like asking her opinion on different issues that I'm confronting, things like making sure I honor that day off together. You know, I get asked to do all kinds of things in the community, and often it's on a Friday, and I say, absolutely not. That's my day with my wife. She feels honored when I do that. I also listen to her when she thinks I'm driving a bit too fast. I'm still learning on that one, Neil, too, okay? But she loves it. She feels honored when I initiate prayer times together. When she's telling me something that's painfully personal, she doesn't need me to offer a solution. Just when I listen to her and care for her, she feels honored when I do so. So I give a list of 20 things that I've learned through the years that make Marilyn feel honored. I think every husband could probably come up with another list, but just make sure you follow whatever list you come up with. That's the way she feels honored.
Well, and let's remember, too, and I think your listeners would all agree with this, we're all so different. So what makes David feel honored might go right over your head or right over the head of a listener. So I think it's really important. In my case, I felt like it was important for me to study David and to find out, you know, what was his – we know we hear a lot about love languages, but what about his honor language? What made him feel honored? So I have in my book 50 little ways you can begin to honor your husband right now, and I encourage my readers to study their husband. Find out what makes him tick and what makes him feel special. A friend of mine that I had coffee with just the other day said that she didn't realize it, but when her husband came home, she would unload the dishwasher while she talked with him. And finally, he had the courage to say to her, you know, I really want your eye contact, and I really want you to be there with me. The dishes can wait. So little things like that, little things become big things, I think, when you practice them, good things. Little good things become huge, you know, building blocks when you practice them over time.
We've only got about 90 seconds left, and not really enough time, but I just thinking maybe, Marilyn, if you would say a word about maybe advice for pastors' wives, and David, feel free to jump in too, but know that we have ministry leaders listening today, that and their pastors sort of have a target on their backs, it seems.
They do, and especially since I wasn't going to be one ever, right? you know, it's funny because my daughter is a pastor's wife now. We were having a conversation the other day, and she's read a study that said that the hardest job in the world next to being president of the United States was being a pastor's wife. Now, I don't know if that was an official study or if it was somebody's opinion, but it is a tough job because the skill set that you need is incredible, and then the pressure that you have to endure is amazing. And I think, again, this goes back to my first point about really all we can do, Neil, is be strong in the Lord. And I've tried over the years to be strong in the Lord, to use the gifts that he's given me, which are different from other women's gifts. You know, everybody's got a different spiritual gift, and if I can be faithful in that respect, the pastor's wife thing pretty much takes care of itself, because our people know, and I mean, after 35 years at the same place, I can't lie. You know, they know I'm telling the truth because it'll come out. And I tell them all I can do is love David with my whole heart, use the gifts that God's given me, and be myself. And then beyond that, you know, there's really nothing else I can give them. And for some reason, that recipe has worked, hadn't it, David?
Yeah, and I would just say, just remember, pastors and your wives, that you are the evil one's prime target.
Absolutely.
He's after you, so make sure that you do everything to be together, to be one. The name the devil means the divider. He wants to divide you. So make sure you're together, praying together, loving one another, and
guard
just don't let anything interfere with your hearts and your homes.
And watch social. Be careful how much time you spend on social media. I'm going to say that one is almost like a whole other topic that we really need to make sure we're giving our best to our families.
Well, we've gotten a lot of great information, and there's much more found in the books. 8 Great Ways to Honor Your Wife, 8 Great Ways to Honor Your Husband. They're new out from Marilyn and David Chadwick. David and Marilyn have been ministering together at the Forest Hill Church in Charlotte, North Carolina for the past 35 years. We're honored to have them with us today here on Connecting Faith. Again, if you missed part of the show, you can always catch it online. We post the interviews on our website, myfaithradio.com. Click on the Connecting Faith show page.